Hey there, Getting in the Loop listeners. Ever wondered what can be done in your industry to help create a more circular economy? To mark the one-year anniversary of the Getting in the Loop podcast, I've put together a short ebook to help you navigate key circular trends in textiles and apparel, ICT and electronics, and packaging. And it includes links to related reports as well as relevant Getting in the Loop podcast episodes. It's yours to receive when you join up to our podcast newsletter at circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. So head over to our website to get your copy of the Circular Sectors Navigator. That's again, circularsectors.gettinginthelooppodcast.com. Hi, I'm Katie Whelan, and join me each week as I talk with experts around the globe about circular economy. You'll find out what's being done to make it a reality, and if it can really solve the problems it promises. It's time for Getting in the Loop.
Welcome back to the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm Katie. Today is the last episode in our series in partnership with the International Society for the Circular Economy. And I'm very excited to introduce to you today's guest, Ihab Sayed. This episode has it all. Circular materials, circular design, circular business models. In this episode, you will learn how Ihab's company, Biome, is using bio-based materials to create a company founded on circular economy principles. We'll discover how Biome is revolutionizing the construction industry with mycelium, which comes from mushrooms, and other plant-based materials, as well as circular design strategies like modularity. Plus, find out more about Ihab's upcoming keynote for the inaugural digital conference of the International Society for the Circular Economy. Ihab Sayed is the founder and director of innovation at Biome and a PhD researcher at Northumbria University. He is a sustainable designer, engineer, circular economy strategist, and built environment innovator with a passion for creating a circular future that meets our environmental, economic, and human needs. Through extensive research on the global construction industry, he founded Biome to develop nature-inspired construction systems and materials that champion a transformation towards the integration of biological processes in manufacturing. Leading a solid team of passionate and talented designers, engineers, architects, biologists, and business innovators from around the globe, he is working towards revolutionizing the construction industry. He is a Climate Kick professional, a Climate Kick certified professional, a member of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, Circular Economy Club, and the UK GBC, and with Biome has amassed a portfolio of awards and recognition from highly regarded international bodies. If you've been listening to the Getting in the Loop podcast this month, then you know that we've partnered with the International Society for the Circular Economy ahead of their inaugural conference on July 6th through 7th of 2020. We've been giving the opportunity to meet some of the key people involved in the conference, like Walter Steil, who is the honorary president of the society, as well as Anders Wiekman and Ihab Sayed, who are keynote speakers for the event. To learn more about and register for the digital event, I've made sure to include a link to the society's website in the show notes of this podcast episode. So head over to gettinginthelooppodcast.com to find out more and also listen to some of the previous episodes. One more announcement before we get into today's episode. The Getting in the Loop podcast will be taking a break from our regularly scheduled programming for the summer and resume in September. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast so that you can get notified when we resume and if any bonus content airs. Thank you so much for coming on the Getting in the Loop podcast. I'm so excited to dive into Biome today with you. But before we get started, maybe you can just tell us where you're calling from.
Absolutely. So I'm calling from London, UK. And thank you very much for inviting me to take part in the podcast.
Yes, super, super excited. How is everything going in terms of the COVID situation where you are?
Yeah, so the COVID situation is very interesting. I guess because we're quite a localized company practicing the circular economy, we managed to really cushion the blow quite a bit. We've actually done quite well throughout the transition. And we've managed to be able to secure a lot of the work and the experiments that we had running. So we did quite well. And also, I think the time that people have had to sit at home and reflect and ask a lot of questions about the way that we are currently running our economies and the manufacturing practices have created a bit of an opportunity for new ways of looking at the economy, new ways of bringing products to market, and just allowed us to really get some really interesting conversations going with some major stakeholders.
That's great to hear that. That's kind of maybe it's not such a nice situation, but it seems that you've been able to take it and you're working to make something good come out of it. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think it is obviously a very tragic time for a lot of people. I personally actually got all the symptoms of the virus and got really seriously ill as a result. So I have seen both sides of it, but I think from a company perspective, it just seemed like a really great opportunity to pause, reboot, and really rethink everything. And it's really proven to us that the circular economy and localized supply chains are really the way forward, because you're building in resilience locally as well as globally.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you seem to be back to normal, or at least feeling better and able to have this chat with me. But let's unpack. So Biome, can you tell us just a little bit of a general introduction? Because I think you've already mentioned so many things I want to discuss in terms of like local production and what your company is all about. So let's just start off with a general overview and introduction.
Absolutely. So Biome, I guess you can call us a bit of a philosophy company. We call ourselves, or our slogan is, the future of home. And that's because everything we do really is to work towards a more regenerative and restorative future. We are a research and development led company, but we're also a biomanufacturer, and we have a number of products and services that we offer. Our aim really is to revolutionize the construction industry and bring about a bit of a bio-revolution in the way that we produce, the way that we do business. And we're trying to make sure that such radical and groundbreaking technologies that we're coming up with are delivered in a very ethical and equitable manner, locally as well as globally. We've created a mushroom-based insulation, or a mycelium insulation product, and that's going to be launched at the end of this year. We've got our first manufacturing facility currently being built, and it'll be operational from August. And we'll take a few months to calibrate things and get things ready, but we've got the first order sort of going out at the end of the year, which is really exciting. We've also got another material that we've developed called ORB, or Organic Refuse Biocompact. And it's a sheet material made out of food or agricultural waste. It's completely natural. It's, comparable to things like MDF or OSB. And we're developing that into a plant-based concrete, which is quite an exciting prospect. Yeah. We've also developed an interlocking construction system, which will eventually combine all of our materials. And that's looking to be launched in around 2 to 3 years' time.
Okay, so we have some short-term things like on the horizon, and then we have some longer-term projects. But the sort of thing that's tying them all together is that they're for building the built environment, buildings and construction, if I
yes,
hear you right.
Yeah. And also, I guess the core of our philosophy is taking inspiration from nature. We can see that over the 4 billion years that the natural world has evolved, there's been so much refinement and optimization and really feats of engineering that we can learn so much from. So what we do is we look at real needs in the industry and marry them with some absolutely genius innovations from nature, and come up with some solutions for them. So we look at our products as basically a manifestation of that philosophy of taking inspiration from nature and only having a positive impact at every step of the process, socially, environmentally, and economically.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you would call that like biomimicry.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a designer. I guess I still am, but like in my past life, I was a designer. And so mm-hmm. that was something that I was super fascinated about, like learning about eco-design and then biomimicry design strategies.
Amazing. Yeah. And it is really fascinating when you dive into it. You know, there's so many solutions that aren't really brought to light, and the more that you look into the way nature approaches problems, you find that there are applications to that, not just in the product and manufacturing processes, but also in business models. So we look at how nature takes into account the changing environments and how species evolve, and we're able to mimic that process to align the incentives and motives of different stakeholders in the industry to create business models that are truly equitable and take into account all of their needs and align their motives and, you know, basically marry the motives and the offerings with the incentives and the needs.
Yeah. Something you said just then about how to take business models and sort of align with the changing environment. Do you have an example of this? Like, it's super fascinating for how can you sort of allow to design for changing environments? Maybe you can say something in connection with one of the products or what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. So when you look at, for example, the changing landscape at the moment, from our reliance on fossil fuels or petrochemical materials, to trying to find ways of reusing resources that are currently available in industry and that are being circulated, we can find so many opportunities where there is an excess of materials or resources, and there are lots of stakeholders that are producing those excess resources. And the idea is marrying those stakeholders with solution providers or solutions or technologies that can make use of that. And then you have a business model starting to emerge. The real critical part is then taking into account the local environment around those resources, so the local community, the local infrastructure, and taking that into account when you're creating those business models. So you make sure that any impact that is happening on the local community and on the infrastructure and the local environment is only restorative or regenerative or positive. And it's not, it's easier said than done. It's mm-hmm. quite a challenging process, but with the appropriate stakeholders and with the right sort of solid understanding of how economies work, and also with the introduction of AI, which is a really interesting side of all of this, you can really start to think more intelligently about tying those needs and motives together between the different stakeholders and create new business models that are for the future and that are more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we can dive into the product that's coming. I've written down the mycelium. I'm going to pronounce that wrong.
Yes, mycelium.
Yeah. Mycelium, which is the mushroom product, the mushroom-based product. Correct. Of course, anytime I'm saying this wrong, just correct me. And then you had Orb, which is the sheet material that's like the plant-based concrete. So I'd love to just talk a little bit about, maybe you can just tell us what led to what they are first, and then a little bit behind the scenes of getting this out into the world, which I realize is probably a process that's still happening.
Absolutely. So mycelium is the vegetative root structure of mushrooms. It's known as nature's internet. It's what's usually underground. The mushroom that we're all familiar with is the fruiting body. And underground, you've got a root system, which is the mycelium. And that mycelium is known as nature's biodegrader as well, because it's one of the main things that biodegrades organic as well as synthetic compounds that are in nature. And we've managed to take that quite far as well. I'll come to that in a little bit. But the idea is that when you grow mycelium in a contained space, you're able to create a very insulating product. And that's why we realized that if you're looking for insulation that is natural, and if you're using biomimicry as your sort of guiding philosophy, mycelium promotes or provides a very great opportunity for insulation. We tested that against industry standards, and we found that we were achieving values that are 2 to 3 times any other natural product in the market, and comparable to the most premium synthetic insulation materials on the market.
Wow.
And that was quite a revelation, yeah. And then you look at the fire resistance properties of mycelium, and you realize that because it's so chitinous and it's got, which means that it's got a lot of chitin, a high concentration of chitin within the mycelium itself. And chitin is usually found in seashells. It's a very hard material and it provides a lot of strength as well, but it's naturally quite fire, it's like a natural fire retardant. So without adding chemicals or additives or coatings, you get really good fire resistance in natural material. When it comes to the health and well-being properties, again, when we tested it against standards to look at the VOCs or the volatile organic compounds that are emitted from materials throughout their life, we got an A-plus rating, which is the highest possible rating you can get. there was about 3 VOCs released over the 28 days, and those VOCs were like flavorants and probably came from our lab rather than from the actual material. So I think it sort of ticked all the boxes, and now we're continuing to do more testing, of course, so that by the time we start production and start taking orders, that all of the industry certification and the accreditation process is complete to a place where we can actually start selling it into the market.
Mm-hmm. And so the end user would be like having this insulation for housing developments or any sort of new construction project.
Absolutely, yeah. So housing, also we're looking at prefabricated circular construction systems that it could be integrated within. But we're also looking at quite unusual uses like insulating trains and insulating pipes and things like that. So as an insulator, it's just quite an interesting material.
Yeah, yeah. From what you're saying, I basically heard like nature has a solution and it's probably better than the synthetic solution that we have come up with.
Yes, I mean, you find that quite often. I mean, you look at our air conditioning and ventilation systems, and then you look at how termite mounds are able to maintain incredibly precise temperatures and vary those throughout the year. And it's all done passively throughout the intelligence of the structure of the actual mound. So we tend to look at sort of man-made solutions as quite a primitive approach when compared to nature-inspired solutions, and that's sort of what drives us to, you know, use biomimicry as a source of our inspiration.
Yeah, and I'm curious, and probably some of the listeners are also curious, like, how did you get started on this journey? Because you're mm-hmm. the founder of Biome, and so kind of, did you have this big epiphany moment? Was it during like a design or engineering class that you're like, we need to do this better? Yeah.
Yeah, so it started when I was doing my master's at Brunel University, actually. I carried out a project, it was a 2-year project, looking at waste streams in the construction industry. It started by just looking at waste streams in the UK, but the figures were coming out of construction and the amount of resources that are just going straight to landfill and not actually being used at all was quite shocking. And that made me really pivot and start focusing on that. I realized one of the main barriers or one of the main causes to creating that waste was people's perceptions and the way that we perceive buildings. The technologies are available. There are a lot of really interesting materials that aren't really scaled yet that could help solve some of those problems. But the perceptions around natural materials and around new innovations didn't really allow for those to get very far. So I decided to develop a interlocking construction system inspired by the way carbon molecules bind together. And it basically allows buildings to be deconstructed at any stage of their life. It doesn't need any binders or any permanent fasteners. So the building, almost like a jigsaw puzzle, fits into one another and you create a whole building. Throughout its life, you can adjust it and reconfigure it so it can basically shrink and grow in accordance to the occupant's needs. And it reduces the build times by about 95%, costs by 70%, and the environmental impact is actually positive, so it reduces the impact by 120%. And I, you know, got really excited with it. It brought it to the industry, and everyone I met said, you have to patent this, you have to take it forward, you have to start a business. At the time, I was just going to get a normal job and, you know, go down the normal route of a career. But I decided to patent it, and it's now actually been expanded to almost 60 countries globally. So the patent has gone quite far at the moment. But at the time I patented it, I started the company to promote it and develop it. And very quickly I realized that all of the materials I was looking at, and they included things like eco-concrete and, you know, board materials that are natural, and also some natural insulation products. Everything that I felt really met all of my quite militant sustainability and social targets was either still at a research stage, wasn't quite scalable, or was just very extortionate when it comes to price and wasn't really viable. And at that point, I decided to pivot and focus more on the material side of things, because it felt like that was really one of the major issues. The construction system was developed to change perceptions and change how we interact with buildings, but you can't really create that without you know, looking at the materials first. I was very lucky to be able to bring on board some incredible scientists, designers, and engineers. Some that used to work at NASA and, you know, are really intelligent people and have brought a lot of value to the company. And we started developing our materials. We knew that mycelium was used on a smaller scale in things like packaging and product design. And we just couldn't help but see the incredible insulation properties of it. And when we did some of our own testing on it, we realized this is an absolute gold material for insulation and construction. And so we focused all of our energy on developing that. And whilst we were developing that, we decided to look at board materials and sheet materials, because we felt there was a huge need to look at replacement for that as well. Because all of the viable board materials that are currently available that aren't plastic have really high concentrations of formaldehyde, which is really terrible for our health in so many ways, and also in terms of sustainability. So that led us to go down the route of looking at waste resources. We looked at food and agricultural waste. We actually started with orange peels and coffee grinds and also coffee chaff. And we developed a completely natural organic binder that's actually edible. It's got no chemicals or anything like that in it. And once it's mixed with the waste streams and processed, it becomes a very solid and rigid material that has got even better mechanical properties than some of the board materials that are used at the moment. And so very quickly, we started to, you know, develop one material after the other to get to the point where we're ready to launch the construction system. And I guess maybe to give you a little bit of background to that, the construction system is sort of panelized. It's made out of a concrete, a board material, and an insulation material, which makes things clear about why we're going down the route of developing those materials in particular.
Yeah, I love it. So you had this overarching goal of this interlocking construction system, but then you realized to make this possible, you didn't have specific materials to mm-hmm. actually fit it. So then you went out and said, well, we're going to make these to fit what we need. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's definitely not the easiest route to take. And it would have been easier to potentially use some of the other you know, more damaging or less socially impactful materials that are on the market. But we really wanted to start a bit of a bio-revolution. We wanted to start something new. We wanted to change perceptions. And with that comes a big concentration on business models. Because in order to create materials that are completely natural and bio-based, we didn't want to create a new problem where, you know, we've got giant pieces of land being used up to create that agricultural or organic matter. And we realized that there's a whole gold mine in every city, in every industrial space of byproducts and waste streams that are being created, being generated, and are either going into, you know, burning them for energy or other sort of solutions that may not be the most sustainable, or, you know, may have a more negative impact, arguably, than just putting them in landfill in some ways. So we decided to make use of that. And the way we did that is by working with really large organizations that already create such huge amounts of waste and a variety of waste streams, and allow them to meet their circularity goals, their sustainability goals, by collecting those waste streams from them, providing them with a bit of a carbon credit, because our materials production processes are actually carbon negative. By working with us, they're able to meet their goals. They're able to also save on the costs of disposing of those waste streams. And we're able to provide our supplement our production process with the appropriate resources.
So it's really creating this shared value that you were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's almost kind of like a little bit of an industrial symbiosis a bit in terms of taking this these wasted resources from companies and being able to take it and use it is something useful for your organization.
Definitely. Yeah. I think symbiosis is a really important word, and that's exactly the type of approach we take when building those relationships. It's all about understanding their pain points, understanding the needs that they have that we can fulfill, and tying those two together. So creating a symbiotic relationship that's long-term, and also ending up with a much more well-conceived and holistic product in the end through those collaborations.
Mm-hmm. And you've touched on business models a lot in terms of talking about how you work with your partners and the various stakeholders. I'm just curious, because part of my PhD research was focused on like circular business models. So I'm just, you know, we talked about design and the great work that you're doing with design of your interlocking construction system, but is there some new novel twist to the how you're providing these interlocking construction systems to end customers? Mm-hmm. I would love to hear if there is some twist you put on that.
So there is a really interesting side to, I guess, our scalability and our growth. And instead of going down the more conventional route of raising round after round of funding and setting up, you know, giant manufacturing facilities that are really costly to set up, first of all, but also may not be the most sustainable approach because of the transport emissions associated with that. We decided to go down, and this also came out of my PhD, by the way, and my work in that area, but it's looking at, you know, how we can scale up in a way that doesn't only benefit bio. So scaling up in a way that can distribute the benefits and the wealth that is generated from us providing those materials to the industry. And we came across a social enterprise called the Onion Collective. They actually found us because they were got some funded piece of research that they were carrying out, showing them the bio-based materials as the future, and that's the industry they should go down exploring. And they got in touch with me. They said, they're looking at bio-based materials. What advice have I got? And I said, well, actually, I'm looking at a new way of developing manufacturing facilities with social enterprises in a way that, you know, the benefits can be distributed within the community. Turns out they've already also gone down a very similar route of, you know, working out new business models and creating community businesses rather than charities or social enterprises in a conventional sense. And we brought our sort of knowledge and our ways of thinking together and created this business model that allows us to partner with social enterprises to set up a jointly owned manufacturing facility in their local community, in their local geographic location. That facility is funded through either grant money or money that we raise collectively. And then the profits of the facility are shared 50-50 between bio and that community business or the social enterprise. And the profit share that goes to the community business or the community is to be spent on infrastructure regeneration, improving their schools, improving their education. Also just looking at inspiring entrepreneurial spin-offs from the facility and really just resulting, I guess, the facility acts as a catalyst for regeneration in a much bigger sense because it creates opportunities locally. It's also using some really groundbreaking or some high-tech technologies, and that really gets young people excited locally and allows them to think of opportunities in a very different way. We're also doing this in the most disadvantaged place in the UK. They've got the lowest social mobility. I think the income for a household, not for a person, is about 16,000 a year. So, you know, that's conventionally lower than the rest of the country. And so creating a facility like this that creates jobs and allows for a profit share was, you know, a way that through good intentions and through goodwill we've come to create it, but it turned out that it just has so many other benefits we haven't considered. For example, local authorities are now inviting us to set up similar facilities in other countries and in other parts of the UK, because basically we're able to help them create that regeneration work that they're usually in charge of, and support them with that. But also we're creating a carbon sink on the in their local region. So we're ticking a lot of boxes without realizing, and we sort of stumbled upon this new way of working that allows us to scale without requiring such huge capital and putting strain on the management team of the company, and allowing us to still continue to practice our ethos the way that we want to.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a decentralized approach in some ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's the same approach that we take with protecting that IP. So we're obviously generating a lot of IP around all of our technologies and all of our manufacturing processes. And so, we're obviously creating a lot of IP around our manufacturing process and our technologies. And we know that in order to gain credibility, in order to gain commercial freedom, we have to go down the patenting route. Even though us as a team don't really believe in the ownership of ideas, we understand that we're standing on the shoulders of giants, and every idea we come up with is based on a million other ideas from the past. But we're going down the patenting route, and we're patenting those ideas to protect them in order to allow us to be able to distribute the benefit and the wealth generated from them in an ethical way, and allow us to scale in a way that takes into account other stakeholders and their benefits and not just our own.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because otherwise you risk having it being taken and potentially applied in a way that isn't aligned with your values and doesn't do the good that you're trying to do through.
That's correct. The company. Yes, yeah. And that's also the question when it comes to licensing. You know, when you have patents, licensing is the easiest way to make money and to grow quite quickly. But when you're licensing, first of all, the other part of it is the licensee. It's not really in an equitable position when it comes to growth and scalability. If they are disadvantaged in any way, they still have to pay the licensing fee. They're still obliged to do certain things, which may put them in actually a worse position than they were before they took that license on in the first place. And that was something that really made us feel strongly about developing this new business approach with social enterprises. And we can also do it with individuals and with other organizations, as long as they are willing to put that profit share towards the community and towards local regeneration. So we're looking at new ways that are less extractive, that champion a circular economy, not just in a material flow approach, but the circular economy in terms of relational models and how we can recirculate the wealth and the value that we're creating.
I love it. I'm just taking this all in and also thinking, like, how can I apply this to my own work? And yes, it's
thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I might have to follow up with you with some, like, just for an entire other podcast episode to just talk about, like, how you go about setting this up and how to use, like, tips and tricks for being less extractive and having these sort of shared, I don't know the word, but the shared commonalities and how to set up all of these different organizations and establish these partners. I think it's very inspiring. And I think it's definitely like the more type of circular economy that I would want to see, rather than having sort of some big powerful people who are in control of the materials, for example.
Absolutely. And I think all of the the social inequalities that we're seeing around the world, particularly now more than ever, it's become, you know, very much in the public conversation. Those are all indirect results of that sort of more capitalistic approach that became rife in the 80s. And, you know, what we're doing may be seen as focused on materials and technologies, But what we're actually doing is we're directly addressing those social inequalities and those inequities, and we're bringing back the power to local communities and creating that local resilience. Because when something like a pandemic happens, for example, if you haven't got that local resilience built in, then the global resilience starts to be affected massively. And when we've got a lot of decentralized pockets of power, pockets of value, they start to support themselves when things like this happen. So what's happening today has really reassured us and reaffirmed that our approach could actually become mainstream and could actually become more practiced in widely.
Yeah. So you said decentralized, and I think something that is happening right now kind of illustrates this decentralization, because Biome is going through a crowdfunding campaign, right?
Yes.
So can you tell us about what your goal, and sort of tell us about why you're doing this?
Absolutely. So from the start, I've been advised by a lot of startup advisors to go and speak to and pitch to venture capitalist firms and go down the VC route of funding. But I just felt this niggling sort of gut feeling that that's not really the right way of doing it. That is the right way if I want to scale up very quickly and sell the company and move on to something else. And you know, that is appropriate in certain circumstances. But for Biome, we really want to change, create a step change in an industry. And we want to change perceptions for good and have a lasting, sustainable change. In order to do that, it takes a lot of time and it's really difficult. And you want to be able to have that control and be able to maintain the stamina to be able to continue to work on that mission for the long term. And we felt that the goals and motives of VCs and traditional financiers weren't really aligned with our ethos and our approach. And so we held back from that for the first almost 4 years, and just basically went for friends and family supporting us through donations, through no interest loans and little things like that. We applied for a lot of grants as well. We actually won the Waitrose and Partners Planned Plastic Prize last year. Which provided us with a lot of funding to explore our plastic consuming mycelium strains, which is something I didn't mention, but mycelium or fungi can consume plastic and synthetic waste streams and actually micro-remediate it, removing all of the toxins from it. Wow. But through the grant funding, through the support from family and friends, and the real generosity of a lot of industry players, a lot of industry groups, we've managed to get as far as we did without giving away equity and without going for conventional forms of investment. We decided to go down the crowdfunding route, and of course, to start an equity crowdfunding campaign, you have to find an angel investor or a sort of lead investor to start the process. And it took us about 9 months to secure the appropriate angel investor. And that's not because we couldn't find anyone. We had a lot of VCs from around the world actually, offer to take part in it. But we refused that because, again, we wanted to make sure that the ethos and the long-term approach is ingrained in that investor that comes on board. And we found the absolutely perfect, somewhat philanthropic investor, but also has a VC arm and, understands the value of business and the long-term approach to business. And he's come on board to support us and allowed us to launch our crowdfunding campaign. And with the crowdfunding campaign, we just wanted to get as many people around the world as possible involved with this fire revolution. Because we didn't just want to have one major investor have a huge stake in the company and use the company, I guess, to service their particular needs or motives, but we wanted to decentralize funding and allow as many people as possible to put in anything from £10 to whatever they're capable of putting in to take part in this and continually benefit from it. And because we don't have a conventional exit strategy, we've decided to reward investors through dividends that start a lot earlier than usual and are also much more generous than usual. But we still reinvest around 95% of our profits in the company. So we're able to heavily reinvest in our R&D, in our approach, offer really good return on investment to investors through dividends and allow them to just be part of this journey for the long term. So we're applying again that whole biomimicry symbiotic relationships approach to funding as well. Our crowdfunding campaign is now live. It's still live for a while. So please, if anyone is listening and would like to take part, please go ahead and check us out. We're on Cedars. We're very grateful for everyone that has already supported us.
Yeah. I'll make sure to put a link to the campaign in the show notes so that listeners can go over there and check it out. Is there Amazing. A specific amount that you're looking for Yes. or just...
Yeah, so we're looking to raise 750,000. Our stretch target is 1.25 million. So that's really what we're aiming for. And we've already raised, I think, almost 600,000 in the first 10 to 15 days of the campaign.
So, wow, yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's super impressive.
I think it's the right time, I think, and people are open to new ways of doing things. And a lot of people from the finance industry, I actually presented to the World Bank and BNP Paribas not long ago. And I was very sort of candid in my presentation. I just said that the current economic climate, the current finance sector, it's not really helping our approach to climate crisis and to social equity. And there needs to a change needs to happen. And I was really surprised. I was expecting quite a bit of backlash, to be honest. But I was really surprised with the acceptance and also the realization that, yes, our economy needs to change. And we are working on changing it. And how can we work together to look at different ways of, governing our finance sector and our economies. So I think it's just the perfect time for a change to happen. It's the perfect time to rethink our approaches. It's a perfect time for a bio-revolution.
Yeah. So people who contribute to this crowdfunding campaign, they basically become like shareholders? They become a shareholder in Biome.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And since you are spreading around the world as well, like I'm just thinking if people, you're talking about, working with local communities and this new way of doing, this new way of how you work, would it be, is it possible for people to get more involved in this too? Like set up a local company or manufacturing center?
Absolutely. So, like I mentioned earlier, we've been invited by governments around Europe to set up a facility there. But we've also had a lot of sort of innovators, local businesses, social enterprises from around the world also ask if they can set up a facility in their local community because they feel their community needs it, or there's a need for regeneration. Or there's just a lot of resources being wasted locally and that they feel that they could come to good use through bio-based materials. So absolutely, I think if anyone feels that there's an opportunity anywhere that they'd like to collaborate or work with us on the same business model we're implementing in West Somerset, we'd be more than happy to look into that. I think what we're aiming for is to really establish ourselves quite well in Europe. We're looking at a few projects in India and Rwanda, potentially as a sort of feasibility studies of the business model, how that would work in developing economies. We're completely open to new ideas and anyone who's interested in being part of this.
Yeah, brilliant. So I realize that this conversation has flown by you're very busy. So I want to make sure that we let you go on time, but, I had two final things that I wanted to ask you. And the first is you probably already hinted at this already, but you're going to be speaking and giving a keynote at the International Society for a Circular Economy. That's going to be on July 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th, something. One of those dates. We'll have the correct one in the show notes. But maybe you can just, what can we expect from the keynote? Do you have a specific topic you're going to be focusing on, or is it going to be just all about Biome and one product, or is it going to be kind of giving the overview? Maybe you can just give a hint of what you're going to be speaking about. Hopefully it's not a rehash of everything we've covered.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Sorry, you cut out a little.
Yeah, I noticed it cut out as well. So,
but. Right. So that's really a really exciting conference about circular economy. I'm going to be talking about our approaches and the material work that we have carried out, and offer the industry really practical solutions to implement the circular economy, and also hopefully inspire others to look at more circular business models and more ethical business models that take into account the social impact or the social side of the circular economy. We hear a lot about, you know, material flows when you hear about circularity, but I believe that there's so much more value in applying the circular economy to business models, to relational models, and really expanding the circles beyond just material flows and taking into account the finance sector as well. It'll be a bit of a talk that zooms out. It starts from the materials and the physical products we're offering, and then zooms out into business models and how we can create an economical change.
Yeah, it seems super inspiring. And also what you said in terms of not just looking at material flows, but also considering the economy as a whole. And I think sometimes that's quite left out in the conversations about circular economy. But at the end of the day, it's about the people and the products that are in an economy and how they interact. It's not just about the material flows.
And absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think just bringing back that human aspect to business, I think that's really all it boils down to, taking inspiration from nature and using our human nature in business in a way that it has been quite absent or maybe forgotten about in the past.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to listening to the keynote, and I hope that some of the listeners will also attend the conference as well. So I'll have the links to that in the show notes as well, so people can find out about that and figure out how they can join. Before we go, nice. Sometimes I get super excited about
carry on.
Yeah. So just making a note of that. So the last question that I ask all of the guests is about this game that I created. It's called In the Loop. And actually I crowdfunded to raise the capital to produce the game. So a little bit different than the crowdfunding that you're doing. But I completely, you don't want to bring in venture, we don't want to bring outsiders. How do we kind of do it the way that we want to do it? So I completely agree in terms of that was my approach for In the Loop. But In the Loop is a game that is about circular economy and specifically about materials that are found in the periodic table of elements. So a little bit different than the bio materials that you're working with, because it's like indium, tungsten, those types of things.
Wow.
But basically what I always ask is, in the game, you're a product producing company and you have to collect the materials to make your product. But there's different events that happen in the game throughout it that sometimes hinder or also help you in achieving your goal. So these events can kind of range from maybe a pandemic happening, or there's an export disruption, or different legal situations. And what I always ask the guests is, what kind of event do you think that's related to your field would you create for this event, this game? If I said, okay, create an event for this game. Do you have any sort of thoughts on that you have?
So I think the event that I would like to create would be an event in which you don't only take into account financial costs, but you also take into account environmental costs and social costs. And that could be the costs in terms of the emotional impact that you have on a society, the costs of the carbon impact, the costs of biodiversity loss, extinction of species. So I think that would make things really interesting if we have to operate within an economy where we're not only costing things in accordance to money, but also taking into account the social and environmental costs.
Yeah, that would be a real game changer pun intended.
Yeah, I think it would really change our perception of things, and I think it will result in a more interesting world, I think.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ihab, for coming on the podcast and sharing about all the great work that you're doing. I wish you the best in the crowdfunding. I'm going to definitely check that out now after the call as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we go, can you tell where listeners can go to learn more about you and the topics that we discussed?
Absolutely. So our website is biohm.co.uk. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and LinkedIn. Our handle is @biohm. And of course, on the CEDARS website, you can find our campaign at CEDARS.com/biohm. Thank you so much for everyone who's tuned in, and we really, really appreciate and are grateful for everyone who's supported us this far, and really look forward to bringing more people on board in this really exciting bio revolution.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and links, go to our website at gettinginthelooppodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our mailing list to have new episodes delivered to your inbox every Monday. See you next week.